Leaders are all around us, at all times and in every area of our lives. They motivate. They risk the first step. But what motivates a leader? In our Central Texas Leadership Series, KWBU has invited local leaders to talk with people they know who guide and inspire to find out what makes them tick. In this episode, Steve Boggs, editor of the Waco Tribune Herald. Hosting the conversation is KWBU President Joe Riley. This conversation was recorded March 10th, 2021, in the KWBU studio.
Steve Boggs, welcome to Central Texas Leadership Series. It's good to have you.
Good to be with you.
Tell us a little bit about yourself. You've been the editor of the Waco Tribune Herald since 2014, is that right?
That's correct.
What led up to that?
I was publishing a newspaper up in Benton, Arkansas, and Jim Wilson, our former publisher, I'd worked for him in the past, and he was looking for somebody to come down and run his newsroom, and we met up, and he invited me to come down and work, so I said, absolutely.
How long have you been in journalism?
Since 1985, so this will be going on my 36th year.
Now, okay, I have to stop and ask, 1985, that was, you had computers in 85, didn't you?
When I started in my first newsroom in Ada, Oklahoma, we were still on typewriters.
Still on manual?
No.
You had electric typewriters.
We had electrics, yeah.
Yeah, but no computers.
No computers.
No Google.
No Google.
No email, I guess. No way to communicate except telephone
right.
And the typewriter.
I started in sports, and I once phoned in a game story from a payphone in Kingfisher, Oklahoma, in the middle of a snowstorm, and that was long before we could just hit send.
So it changes everything over time. I can remember my first job out of college, I was in a TV radio combined newsroom, and so there were, a bunch of reporters. It was one big room, a bunch of reporters
right.
sitting around, and we had desks and with manual typewriters. And a police scanner going all the time, and people coming and going and coming and going and calling in, and radios in the car, so they would call in and
right.
And I'm just picturing in the newspaper that there were I'm sure some similarities to that, but I'm wondering how the changes that you've seen over the years in a typical newsroom. What changes have you seen?
Well, one thing, the day I started, they were smoking in the newsroom back in the day.
Absolutely.
It was very loud.
Yeah.
It still can get loud, but I guess the biggest change in the time I've been in it is the amount of jobs that have gone away due to technology.
Mm-hmm.
People used to have an art department. They had a back shop. They had all of these jobs where people were associated with just producing the print product of the newspaper. And those jobs have kind of gone away over the years, gradually.
One of my first jobs, and I don't mean to make this about me at all, but I'm just thinking one of my first jobs, part of it was I had to run the film processor.
Mm-hmm.
That is something, you don't have to process film anymore. Photographers just have it right there.
We moved to pagination, in at least at the paper I was at, in 1990.
Mm-hmm.
And that eliminated like six jobs right there.
Mm.
And since then, it's just been one progression after the other. You get into Photoshop and electronic photography, and there's no longer a dark room. People ask for prints of photos that are 10, 20, 30 years old. We have no way to make them now.
Mm.
It's all electronic.
But do you keep an archive that
yes.
goes back?
Yes.
So the Waco Trib has archives that go?
The photo archives, I believe, go back into the 80s mm-hmm. at some point. Some of the older stuff, I believe, is over at the Texas collection now. So,
I just, one of my thoughts about newspapers is in a way, especially in smaller communities, but they're the community's historians. And so mm-hmm. the archives has always served as the place you go to dig, to find out about a community's history.
There's kind of I don't know if you want to call it a sweet spot, but there's a kind of a spot between the 80s and early 90s where a lot of the newspaper stories exist only on microfilm mm-hmm. or only within the archives of the newspaper themselves, and they're not searchable. They're not on a database anywhere. And for the 25th anniversary of the Branch Davidian raid, we took it upon ourselves to go back and basically physically type all of those stories from 1993 into our site and get them onto our website so they'd be searchable. And I know everything that there ever was to know about the Branch Davidian raid, mm-hmm. if I can remember it. But those stories didn't exist on our website. They were nowhere to be found. So there were several of us involved in that project, and it was quite the undertaking.
Mm-hmm. But the transition, that has happened, and so now it's just a matter of keeping up with any changes in technology to make sure that the ones and the zeros.
Yeah, since about 98, I believe, everything is there.
Mm-hmm. What first sparked your interest in journalism?
My high school typing teacher said I had a knack for it.
Really?
And she suggested that I take it up as a possible, you know, I started out as a business major in college, didn't know what I wanted to do. And she had suggested that, hey, you know, you're a pretty good writer. Why don't you try that? So I tried to play baseball in college. When I realized I wasn't good enough to play baseball in college, I thought, well, okay, I'll just write about it. So I was a sports writer for about 10 years before I got into news.
And besides this teacher, your family, any connection?
No, just, that was pretty much it. I mean, you graduate from high school, you're kind of aimless. You don't really know what to do. It doesn't take much to point you in a direction, so... Uh-huh. That's kind of how that came about.
How important is local journalism in a community? I would look at a community the size of Waco and say, how important is daily local journalism?
The news deserts are growing around the country with people who don't have any sort of local reporting, whether it's electronic or print journalism, and in those places you see growth slow down, you see corruption on the increase, you see all kinds of bad indicators that come about. So yeah, it's incredibly important. We have kind of, I guess you could say, focused on accountability, watchdog journalism. That's a decision that Becky Gregory and some of the predecessors that were there long before me made, and it was a good one. And that's what we've tended to focus on, is making sure that local government does what it's supposed to.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't do it all like we used to. We're just not that anymore.
So the typical beats that you have in your newsroom, what are the ones? Where do you give priority?
We have basically five primary beats. There's cops, of course, you know, mm-hmm. covering the police beat. And that's an open position for us that's going to be filled at the end of the month. So we have crime. We have the court beat, which Tommy Witherspoon covers. And Mike Copeland covers business and county government. And Carl Hoover is doing most of our entertainment reporting, but also he's covering MCC, Baylor. I mean, we all kind of gang up on Baylor a little bit mm-hmm. to cover it. And those are the main just government accountability beats, but nobody does just one beat anymore. Everybody has a beat plus this or a beat plus that, and that's kind of the way we work it nowadays.
Mm-hmm. As editor, as you're making decisions about what gets priority, how do you juggle those things? How do you make a decision?
Rely heavily on J.B. Smith and Matt Stottlemyre, our two primary copy editors or line editors, as I call them. And we kind of sit down, and JB's been around a long time. He's been there 20 years, and he knows the community a lot better than I do. But we also make sure that the story is important. Is it something that readers need to know today, or can we put it off a day and get more information? But it's an ongoing discussion daily. Every morning, 9:00, that's the first thing we do is talk about the day, talk about the week, talk about the weekend that's coming up, and try to put our resources where they're needed the most.
Mm-hmm. Between, say, breaking news on one end and more long-form, long-term stories, how do you handle that? And I'm not sure exactly what your full staff size is now.
We have 15 people in our newsroom, editors and reporters, and it's been that way since October, since mm-hmm. Bill retired. And I can think Bill's last day was November 6th.
Mm-hmm.
And we have most of our people in our newsroom are writers. We have a couple of people that just do nothing but edit. But yeah, we have three full-time sports writers, and then the rest are in news, or they work in support of the desk, you know, moving pages through. As far as breaking news, I was at a public relations panel a year or so ago, and somebody asked me, you know, what's your deadline now? And I said, well, it's now. Mm-hmm. It's always now. We need to get it onto everything we get as soon as it's ready and it's been read by an editor and fact-checked and gone through. It goes to the website. We don't hold anything anymore. So there's not really a deadline per se. Deadline news is deadline news. Mm-hmm. Whenever it's ready, it goes out.
Does this change the way the stories look in any way? This demand for having the news out as soon as you can have the news out, which is over time, that's been a change.
Well, it's a fine line between getting it out for the sake of getting it out or putting it out now when it's ready. Mm-hmm. It's always when it's ready. And, you know, we get beat by the TV stations all the time, but that's okay. We're all right with that. We just want to make sure it meets our standards before we put it out there on our website.
You mentioned Bill Whitaker retired. At the Trib, how is the opinion side of things handled now?
A lot of what Bill did was so just fantastic. He was just he's a great employee. He was a brilliant mind. It's not as good since Bill left. We're still trying to get him to write for us some. He's contributed some columns, but most of what he did has come to myself to write the local opinions and select the columnists that we use. We have a very good board of contributors that Bill helped put together, and we continue to use them as much as possible.
Mm-hmm. Describe a typical day in the newsroom, if you would. How does it start? What time does it start? Who's there? Do you get everybody together at a certain time in the newsroom?
We haven't seen about half of our newsroom in a year. Since the pandemic hit, we've had most of our people working from home. A lot of our veterans like to come into the office. Witherspoon, you know, Cope and those guys, they like to be there. But the newsroom typically opens at 9, and it will be somebody there until we put the paper to bed at 11, 1130 at night. So there's always somebody there. Unless that person is working from home that day. Mm-hmm. So the pandemic has really hurt in terms of camaraderie and being able to gather as a group. We haven't really done that since last March. It was March 6th, actually, by the way. It's the last time we had a newsroom-wide meeting of 2020.
So it's been a year.
It's been a year.
Well, I hope that's going to change someday.
I think it will. I think we're getting close.
Yeah. I'm seeing news stories that say that the consensus is building, that we're nearing the end.
We're putting out a piece this weekend that's basically looking back at a year of the pandemic and kind of going back and looking at this particular week in 2020 and how everything changed in such a short time. But once we're done with this anniversary-type coverage, we want to move directly into, is the pandemic over? Mm-hmm. And who's going to say when the pandemic's over? You know, is there a percentage of vaccinated population that we have to have? Is it herd immunity? You know, at what point is it going to be okay to take our mask off and resume living, you know? And I think we're headed that way. I just don't think we're there yet.
Mm-hmm. How does print journalism, how has it changed? See how to word this, because clearly there are some ways that it's changed in the world of online media and social media. But does this affect print journalism as a business model? How are you surviving and getting along in the world as we see it today?
I think you're going to see more of this moving forward, but it's kind of moving away from an advertiser-based model to a subscription-based model, and that you'll see that continue. And we're doing actually pretty well with our subscription-based model moving to digital. And advertising's doing okay. I mean, the paper makes money. It's not a question of that. It's just long-term, it's going to be very difficult to support a seven-day print model. I firmly believe that. I think we're going to be okay for a little while, but eventually we're going to move to a to a digital-based model, and that's okay. People are just getting used to it.
I read it both ways, but I got to say, most of the every day when I check into the Trib, I check in online. I mean, because it's just it's so convenient.
Yeah.
And
Me personally, I read the e-edition every day. When I get up in the morning, I fire up the laptop. It's the first thing.
That
I
is
do.
The first thing I read every day. What? Yeah. All right. What happened overnight?
Yeah.
Where are we?
That way, I can still get the comics, the puzzles, and everything that goes with it.
I like to see the layout, which you can see.
Yeah.
And then you can click on a story and pull up the whole thing and read it if you.
You know, interestingly enough, Walter Hussman owns the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. Mm-hmm. He pretty much ended all of his print models. But the readers, when he did, a fantastic job of conversion. But readers told him that when he was making this conversion, they liked the e-edition because they wanted to see the news as the newspaper saw the news.
Yes.
What's the most important story, blah, blah, blah. And that was an interesting take.
That's exactly why I go and first look at the layout. I want to see what's above the fold and what's
right. –
You know, where are these stories, which I don't always know if I just read
the
headlines or the stories as they come.
Decide that every day at 3 o'clock when we have our budget meeting. You know, what's going to be the lead? What's the centerpiece? What's down page? You know, what goes on the inside? 90% of the time it's local because, you know, that's just what we do.
For those who are just joining us, you're listening to the Central Texas Leadership Series here on KWBU. And I'm Joe Riley, and we're talking today with Steve Boggs, the editor of the Waco Tribune Herald. Kind of back up and get a little bit personal, if that's okay. Not too long ago, you at the Trib, lost a reporter.
Yes. A good one.
A good one. And I know you've written about that, and that was a hard thing for you and for the newsroom. I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about how that affected you and the newsroom a little bit.
I don't know. I don't know exactly how to describe it. When we learned of it that morning, it was disbelief. The Trib is kind of a family. And when you have someone who was a prolific writer, prolific reporter, and overall just kind of our spark, I think that's how Bill used to describe her. She was our spark plug in the newsroom. Tons of energy. Loved her job. Loved what she was doing. And for that to happen to her was devastating. It certainly was to me. I think most of the staff felt that way. For it to happen the way it did was kind of a gut punch. And it still is, mm-hmm. and it probably will be for a long time. Mm-hmm. Kristen was a great reporter. She had more sources than probably anybody up there, maybe with the exception of some of the long-timers who have been there, 30, 40 years. But she was just a great person, great reporter, lot of enthusiasm.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you wrote following up on that, and you made it very personal— You talked about, she had diabetes, and what you shared was that you also have diabetes.
That's correct, yeah.
And I'm just wondering, does this give you any kind of framework for the way you look at certain stories and certain types of stories from your own personal experience? How does this inform some of the things that you look at?
With that particular column, it was not a lot of people know that I'm a type 1 diabetic. And I didn't know Kristen was a diabetic until, a couple of months after she started. I saw her give herself an insulin injection in her arm in the newsroom. I said, "You're diabetic?" She says, yeah. So that was a kind of a kinship we shared. And the reason I wrote that column is because I wanted people to understand that not only was she a diabetic, she was a very good diabetic. She really kept good control of her disease. And it was something I don't think people really understood. I think a lot of her sources knew it, the police officers and stuff like that, because they had dealt with her having low blood sugar out on the beat or doing what she was doing, and they'd helped her. And it was just something about her I don't think a lot of people knew. Mm-hmm. And it was just how I identified with her. Mm-hmm. She didn't take any guff, is to use a word my dad used to use, off of anybody, not when it came to her disease management. So she was really good at it.
Which means you then have or had, I don't know where it stands right now, a position to fill a position.
Yes,
in the paper.
Yes, yeah, yeah. We have hired a replacement for Kristen's position. Took a while. A lot of that was just, you know, finding the right person. Mm-hmm. And she'll be joining us March the 30th, I believe, is her start date.
What is the, from your experience, sort of the state of people, young people going into journalism? Is this something that, is it easy, hard to find good journalists, those coming into the?
That's a good question. At times, it's very difficult. I think the number of kids coming out of journalism school has declined, along at the same rate as the number of journalism jobs that are available. Mm-hmm. You'll see a lot of layoffs that happened at national organizations. I think HuffPost had one yesterday. A lot of these guys will catch on with another organization pretty quick. Some of them will just get out of the business. Mm-hmm. What we like to do is we have had forever a standard of having 2 years on a daily newspaper minimum experience to come to work for us. And we like to make sure that we're not hiring somebody right out of J school. We haven't done that since I've been here until now. We had interviewed a couple of people out of J school for this position, and we settled on somebody who had a little bit more experience. She's moving here from Chicago. Mm-hmm. Wanted to get out of the cold weather, basically. And it's funny because she calls in during the ice storm. She goes, "How's it going?" I said, "Well, I think it's warmer in Chicago than it is here right now." So, but the people coming into to our beat is something we need to make sure that they can function when they get here.
I just, you know, KWBU is a very small organization, so we're more a starter for often, not always.
Right.
Not often. Right now we have collectively a lot of experience in this station, but sometimes we've had times where we're the starter place.
Right.
Hire the best we can hire these young people, particularly as we hire reporters, knowing that give them a little bit of time, they'll move on. But it's better, we think, to hire somebody who we know is good. It's sort of the market that we're in here.
It's really remarkable at the Trib. We have a series of people that have been there 30 years or longer that everybody in town knows. Rod, our photographer, has been almost 35 years. Everybody knows Rod. And then you drop down a level to a group of guys that have been there 20 years. Bryce Cherry's been there 20 years, 20 plus, JB and Wynn and some of those guys. And then you have the level below that is the newbies, what I call newbies, which is where I fit in at 7 years. So we do have a lot of experience in the newsroom. And when we bring people in that don't have as much, they learn very quickly. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times those are people that will lose to bigger, you know, bigger papers, different organizations, things like that. And that's okay.
I'm sure that they're, to one degree or another, every market, depending on size, experiences that kind of thing.
Absolutely.
I'm just glad that there are those who find journalism important enough that they want to go into it as a career. I think we've got it posted on our wall here somewhere, but we believe that trustworthy journalism is essential to a healthy democracy. And
one of the conversations we have in the newsroom a lot when we're just, you know, kind of shooting the bull, so to speak, is, you know, this is kind of a crazy time in that, you know, we've just had a president who left office who demanded all of our attention. You know, people ask me all the time, says, you know, what do you think of Trump saying that you're the enemy of the people? I don't care what he says. The question is, you know, where is your attention? And as he has left office and we've gotten past that era, people are starting to focus more on local issues. You know, when your president demands so much of your attention for either what he says, what he does, what he tweets, you sometimes forget what's going on in your own backyard. Mm-hmm. And I feel like we're getting past that a little bit. People kind of waking up and saying, what do you mean my taxes are going up? You know, and they're starting to pay attention. And I think for us, it's important that we keep the same standards we've always had. Mm-hmm. Always.
How important is objectivity as a goal?
It's a goal. It's certainly a very difficult goal. People like to use the word bias, but, you know, people have – reporters have minds, and they see what they see. The main thing we like to do is to give both sides. If you're going to state a story, then if some guy's going to get arrested, call the guy and say, hey, here you got arrested. Mm-hmm. Let him or her, whoever, speak.
I know we're in the last couple of minutes of our time, but I'd love if you've got any particular story that you've worked on through your career that you found particularly satisfying in news reporting.
Nothing that really comes to mind. There's been a lot of things. I remember a story, and this is from a bygone era. We had a shooting at a local city park that happened right on deadline, 10 minutes to deadline. And somehow we managed to get a photograph from the scene that you had to process in the old darkroom, make a print of, get it downstairs, do all the things. And we got it done in 15 minutes. And I still don't know how we did that.
Hmm.
I'm not sure we could do it today. So,
Even when things are instant.
Even when things are instant, yes.
You still have to look at them. Who's had the greatest influence on you as a leader?
A lot of people outside of my father, probably. Well, Jim Wilson, who retired last year as publisher, known him for a very long time. And he and I worked together several years back in the past. I liked the way he carried himself. I learned a lot from him. And I learned a great deal from a woman named Gloria Fletcher, who was the publisher of the Tulsa World for a while. And I think she's running a group of magazines up in Fort Worth now. But just the way they carry themselves, the management style is to keep your employees shielded from your bosses and let them operate to the best of their ability. And that's what I've learned from both of those.
I wish we had time for me to follow up on that because I really would love to. But this is the time that we've had. So, Steve Boggs, I really appreciate your taking the time to come to KWBU to share with us about the Trib and about your life in journalism.
I enjoyed it. Thank you.
This conversation was recorded March 10th, 2021 in the KWBU studio. This and past episodes can be found on our website. Look for Central Texas Leadership Series in the Programs tab at kwbu.org.